Miracy.
When we can take time to actually pause and listen is where the power is, I believe, in actually recognising, is this perfectionism, is this high standards, you know, to hold those two against each other as examples.
Do you ever feel caught in the labyrinth of high-achieving perfectionism? Does the pursuit of flawlessness leave you feeling trapped, where every success seems overshadowed by the weight of unmet expectations? Well, buckle up, y'all, because this episode, we are going to dive into the nitty-gritty details of perfectionism. I'm Melinda Cohen, and you're listening to Just Between Coaches. I run a business called The Coaches Console, and we're proud to have helped tens of thousands of coaches create profitable and thriving businesses. This is a podcast where we answer burning questions that newer coaches would love to ask a more experienced coach. Today, we're delving into the often tumultuous realm of high-achieving perfectionism. As a recovering perfectionist myself, it is a fascinating topic that I love looking into. Is it a driving force or a suffocating restraint? Well, our guest today isn't just well-versed in this domain, but also empathetic to the struggles many face in the pursuit of flawlessness. Today, I've invited Katie Farrell to discuss the topic with me. She is a human potential transformation and mindset coach and founder of The Catalyst for Life, the founder of Weightless Chronicles, where she helps purpose-driven high achievers to be more without it costing more of themselves. She's also the host of the Conscious Connection podcast. Welcome, Katie.
Hi, Melinda. Thank you. It's lovely to be here.
Well, I'm excited to have you on the show and to dive into this topic that I know all too well. But before we get into it, would you mind just sharing a little bit of your background with our listeners?
Yeah, of course. Thank you. So I've been working as a transformation coach for coming up to 14 years now. And that was following a corporate career in generally the realms of HR, change management and training. And what I do now is kind of combining all of the skills and experience that I've had through being in the corporate world myself and, like you, a self-confessed recovering perfectionist. It was a personal journey that I went on of going through burnout because of the, you know, the way I used to strive to be my best and to give my all to everything, and realized actually the change of environment didn't matter because you take what's internally with you. So what I do now is actually help people who are typically high achievers, passionate people, whether they're business owners or in careers, who feel, you know, they don't want to necessarily change who they are because that being a high achiever has got them to where they are now, the successes that they've achieved, but they know it's costing them. Whether it's a sense of burnout or just that they, you know, they look ahead and think, I can't keep going like this for the next 10, 15, 20, whatever it might be, years. So I actually help them to achieve success. And sometimes that's about redefining success for them and then help them to do that in a way that is right for them, you know, that helps them to thrive rather than feeling like they're constantly fighting with themselves to actually achieve what they set out to. That's where I'm at today, and working with those high achievers, but also typically purpose-driven. You know, they feel like there's more than the material, let's say, paybacks of being successful, and helping them to find another driver, another motivator.
Now, let's start with a definition, some distinctions, because I want to make sure that we're all on the same page, so to say. So we talked about high achieving, high achievers. You mentioned that when you were just describing your journey and your story. And how do you define high achievers? And how is that different from perfectionists?
Yeah, so, well, they very much go hand in hand, I believe. I see perfectionism as the internal driver of being a high achiever. So in a sense, a high achiever can define your intentions and the fact that you want to achieve high standards or your work to high standards. But it can also relate more to the outcome, the result. So you want to have success. You want to have high standards that you achieve, whether that's in life, in your career, in business, in sport. Whereas perfectionism tends to be the way that you do it. That's how I see it. It's that feeling of it's got to be perfect. Nothing less will do. So rather than it being the level that you attain, it's the way that you attain it. This sense of nothing less than perfect is good enough. And that can be both from an internal perspective, your own sense of perfectionism and what perfect looks like, and or what you perceive others to see and expect of you and it to be perfect. And I think it's that the combination of the two that really has the biggest negative impact potentially on people, because they're constantly chasing perfectionism. I say they, we.
No, definitely they, for sure they. Now, you know, this is a topic near and dear to my heart because I lived within the realm of perfectionism for a long time. And, you know, the way you are just listening to what you were describing, it's the way that you do it, the internal driver of a high achiever. And I'm like, yeah. And I was thinking, you know, as I was launching my own coaching business and then starting the Coaches Console, and probably for the first 8-10 years of having Coaches Console, I was operating in this perfectionist realm. And I had a business partner at the time, and she would always joke, "Oh, Melinda, you're being a perfectionist again." And the way that I would deal with it was, ha ha ha. And I would joke about it and like laugh it off and whatever. And I never even thought twice about that. And then we were at a mastermind retreat with several colleagues, and I had said something, and my perfectionist tendencies came through, and my business partner made her joke, "Oh, you're being a perfectionist again." And I did my typical response of, ha ha, whatever, my little laughter, laugh it off. And that was how we handled it for years. But one of the colleagues was sitting there. She's also a coach, very dear friend, confidant, wears all the hats, right? And she stopped us. She's like, "Ladies, you have to stop doing that." And we're like, "Wait, what? We didn't even know what we just did." And she said, "You've got to stop berating Melinda for being a perfectionist, because it's her high standards that have gotten you where you are today." And in that moment, it was the first time that anybody ever made a distinction between holding high standards mm-hmm. versus perfectionism. And as soon as she said that, my whole entire world shifted. I had a flashback of all my life experiences when I was a perfectionist. And all the times that I was a perfectionist or behaving in that way, it was fear-driven. All the times I was holding high standards and high expectations of myself, my team, my clients, my colleagues, having those high expectations, it was not based in fear. And I was like, oh, so when fear kicks over, perfectionism, it's like the driver that won't stop. When fear isn't present for me, that internal driver is there and I hold those high expectations, but I do it in a healthy way.
Yeah.
I'd love your input on that, because I've never talked to anybody about that. Is that a me thing? Is it a common thing?
I think it is quite common in terms of what's driving it. And I love the distinction that you've made, that recognition of the fear being the driver when it's perfectionism. And how I look at it is, it's when it becomes not helpful or not healthy, that it tips over from being having high standards and therefore achieving into you're doing it, as you said, out of fear of being judged for not doing well, for not achieving what others expect you to achieve. I work with emotions. I work, you know, as the human potential coach, it's because we are all mind, body, soul, emotions. And yes, we're different in how we express ourselves. That's our uniqueness. But at the end of the day, we all operate in the same way. And all emotions come from, they're either fear-rooted or love-rooted. And I think that's another way of helping to understand perfectionism and letting it go. Because if what we're doing to be out of love for ourselves as well as others, you know, whether that's for our team to work well together or to achieve certain goals and objectives we've set for ourselves, for the business, for our team, and holding each other accountable for what we've said we're going to achieve, but in a way that's healthy, that's supportive, that keeps us well while we're doing it and happy, then we're less likely to operate out of the perfectionism, that fear of what if. What if we don't do this and X, Y, or Z happens? I see the high standards as being a carrot and the perfectionism as being the stick you're whacking yourself with because it's got to be better. It's got to be perfect.
Now, you said something earlier. You talked about, you said the phrase, not good enough. You know, nothing less is good enough. When I really started thinking about perfectionism, the obvious place to go to was the fear of failure. But then underneath that was the not good enough story that was running in my head. When I let that story run in my head, and I see it with so many coaches and new coaches when they're getting started, experienced coaches, like all of us on our journey, the thought, we call it a villain of not, you know, not good enough. When we drop into that thinking and allow those thoughts and the feelings that go with it, it perpetuates the perfectionism. It's like it's trying to outpace the negative self-talk of not good enough. It's like, well, if I just do more and it's even better, then I'll shut down that voice of not good enough. And we're trying to outrun that. Would you share your experience with that or insights about that?
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you've said there. So the inner dialogue that you mentioned and trying to outrun things, we're often just working on autopilot. And those thoughts, that inner dialogue, the demons that are saying, oh, you're not good enough, you know, and reminding us of maybe examples in the past where we haven't been good enough by our own kind of standards that we set for ourselves. When we can take time to actually pause and listen is where the power is, I believe, in actually recognizing, is this perfectionism, is this high standards, you know, to hold those two against each other as examples. How is this making me feel? Because if I'm trying to, in your words, outrun this perfectionist trait, outrun those thoughts that are going on in my head that are trying to derail me, where is that coming from? It's when we try to ignore them, try to suppress them and keep going that we actually run the risk of very much tipping over into the unhealthy perfectionism and, you know, burnout and the other things that are a result of that. So I find pausing and stepping into that fear, that's how we can actually recognize what's going on internally for us and hit what's driving this. Where are these thoughts coming from? Sometimes that can be relatively easy because we can, you know, hear that train of the fear of failure, or people are going to think this about me if I don't do it, if I don't achieve what I've said I'm going to. But some of those can be a lot more deeply ingrained. They can be in our subconscious. So we might not actually know where they stem from. And that can be the most difficult part of actually changing perfectionism. Because most people, if they're perfectionists, they have achieved success, they have done well, they've got these high standards, and often think, well, why should I let those drop? It's what's got me here. It's what's got me doing well. It's, you know, helped team members or whoever it might be that you work with or train with. So it's seeing where they're coming from. What are those thoughts? What's driving them? How do you feel when they come up? Because the emotions that we feel are often the biggest indicator as to whether it's a healthy or an unhealthy response, a driver, whatever that might be. So actually taking time to listen to ourselves, the inner dialogue, recognize what we're feeling, and then start to sort of dig into where that's coming from.
Now let's talk about, just said, you know, how do you feel when it comes up? So let's talk about some indicators. You know, my experience has been we have to address this for ourselves first. And then we're also going to have to address it with our clients because our clients are going to be, so it's like twofold, ourselves and our personal life and our business and then with our clients. So what are some indicators that somebody knows, alert, alert, perfectionism has shown up and set up camp? What are some of those indicators in their business? And then I also want to look at what are some of the indicators as they're coaching and working with their clients that they're like, ooh, in themselves, perfectionism has shown up in themselves. What are some of those indicators?
Yeah, perfectionism can show up in not actually showing up because you've got such high standards that you're afraid of showing up as you are isn't good enough. So if you're working with a client who is wanting to achieve certain things, but they're not putting the work in, and which, you know, for a coach can be quite frustrating if you're coming up with goals in a session and then you come to the next session and they haven't done it and they've got excuses, they've got reasons. And so you try to work around those and drill into them and then come to the next session and they still haven't done what they've said they're going to do. That could be a fear, this perfectionism, because they don't believe what they're doing is good enough. And they may not know that on the outside, when I say excuses, they'll have reasons, whether it's technical issues or I needed to write it all out first before I videoed myself doing something, or I wanted to speak with somebody else first before I spoke with my boss about getting a pay rise. Whatever it might be, there will be reasons. But I often find linking it to the emotions and the feelings is good. What does it feel like and where do you feel it in your body? Very often, if it feels like butterflies, that can be a really good feeling. That can be the adrenaline going, oh, it's the excitement. And when you can recognize that, you can think, okay, so let's use that as fuel. Because when you feel those butterflies, yes, it can be fear. It can also be the adrenaline that's going to fuel you to do it. It's going to give you the drive that you need to face your fears and do it. The dread that comes with it is being driven by a fear of the unknown. And so by practicing it a number of times, whatever the situation is, it can actually help us to alleviate that dreaded feeling because it's no longer unknown. Whereas if we just ignore and suppress things that are going on, then it's not likely that we are going to show up in our best way anyway. And if you're not used to working in that physiological way, as a coach working with clients, you can ask them, how does it feel? If they can't think of an emotion that goes with that feeling, you can start to describe, if it was an object, what would it look like? You know, does it feel heavy? Does it feel light? What color is it? So that's good for the coach to ask, but it's also good for the client to kind of help them to think about these emotions and thoughts and feelings in different ways, sort of lean into and feel the feelings. And so if you ask those questions, what does it feel like? What does it look like? The answers will come because they are there.
Mm-hmm. I love that indicator not actually showing up. I'd never really thought about it in that way. So thank you for that. Anything else to call out?
Procrastination is another one. Or procrastination in the sense of not doing something or taking ages to do something, or it can actually show up as endlessly perfecting things. It's not quite ready. It's, I just need to do this to, I just need to do that. So that's another sign, constantly refining something.
Yeah. I found that when I would hear myself doing the when this, then I.
Yes.
Or like when that phrase shows up repeatedly, it's like, oh, wait a minute. Well, when this happens, then I'll do this. Or when that is in place, then I'll. That was always an indicator for me that I'm like, wait, what's going on here? And just a time out to ask the questions, feel it fully is how I describe it. In the beginning, I couldn't take myself through those exercises. All I could say was, I'm doing it again. That was as far as I could get. And I had to go to my business partner, colleagues, my coach, you know, my trusted confidants around me and be like, it's happening again. It's like my synapses in my brain just didn't even know how to form. And without those other people, I would just, well, okay, let's just go back to what I know. And so it really took those external factors to help me turn it around. Now I catch it and I'm like, oh, look, I'm so adorable. There's that perfectionist thing going on again. So the opposite of perfectionism for me was research. Because when I could consciously be like, okay, it's all research. Let me research this action, or let me research this exercise, or let me research, you know, XYZ, whatever it is. Then as the researcher, I can say, okay, what worked? What didn't work? What do I want to do differently? And the faster I could get to that do differently, that's how I'm holding those high expectations and standards. What would you describe as the opposite of perfectionism?
I think we all have our own opposites because it's how it shows up for us in the first place. And one of the tools that I'll use with clients is DISC, personality and behavioral profiling. Because I find it's really helpful. It's easy to understand. You know, you don't need to be into psychology to understand it. DISC uses observable behaviors. And so it's easy to see them for yourself, but also in others as well. And I find that each of those traits, without going into it in too much detail, but, you know, D being the dominant driver, I the influencer, S steady and supportive, and C being, you know, cautious. Now, perfectionism has its plus and its negative sides, and it's that tipping point where for you does it stop being healthy and, you know, stop being a strength, and it tips into being a negative trait because you're overusing it. So perfectionism could be going into too much detail. So the procrastinator wants all the I's dotted and all the T's crossed. Now that can be a great trait to have, because you know that if you're somebody with a high C, you will make sure it's right, because if it's worth doing, it's worth doing correctly the first time. A dominant person, perfectionism for them might be actually just getting out, seeing the bigger picture and driving, you know, themselves and team members, for example. Now, that could be great because you're a great motivator. You know where you're going. You've got the direction. But actually, the flip side of that is you might leave everybody else behind. You can be too abrupt, too direct. The more awareness you have of those perfectionist tendencies, how have they shown up? And actually look at it in the other way. When does that perfectionism turn into a positive? What is the strength? What is that flip side? Maybe it doesn't need to be 100%. You know, are you happy if it goes out on time? Whatever feels good for you that you've agreed either with yourself, with your coach, with your team workers. And it's really hard to see that in yourself. But, you know, other people, external people can have a more objective view. And that's why coaches are so valuable to have, because, you know, they can call things out for us. They can help us to find where those strengths become negatives when, you know, when they tip over into you're either playing them too much or not enough. So I think it's how it shows up for you in the first place. And what is the opposite to that?
And it is unique to each of us, even in the realm of perfectionism. I really love how you said, you know, finding that spot for you just before the tipping point, because it's going to be different for all of us. I want to talk about mantras. I know there was three big mantras that I had to repeat regularly to kind of reprogram my thinking. What are some mantras that somebody can, or affirmations that they can use and say to themselves to support them of not just spiraling deeper into perfectionism, but getting to that healthy spot you were talking about?
Yeah. So at the root of the perfectionism, as we've mentioned earlier, is a fear. So a fear of something that's going to make us not safe, that's going to be a threat to our livelihood, to our survival, to who we are as we recognize ourselves. We don't like things that are different, our brains, because it's trying to keep us safe. So it tries to keep everything familiar. And it's when we step out of that, that the fear can kick in. You're like, oh, don't recognize this. This could be life-threatening. So in terms of a mantra, it could be that if you recognize that the perfectionism is stopping you from achieving what you want to achieve, you could say, okay, so my brain is just trying to keep me safe, but safe doesn't enable me to grow. So in order to grow, I'm going to do things differently. I'm still safe, but I'm going to just try something different today. Different is good. Different isn't unsafe. It's about, you know, not making things so drastically different that it does make us afraid, but just allowing us to try. I'm just going to try something different today. What do I feel safe doing in this moment? And then making your mantra fit that.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Is there anything else about this topic that we haven't covered, whether it's an insight about it, a strategy, a story, an experience of yours, an experience of your clients, anything else that comes to mind that you're like, this needs to land in this conversation?
I think if there's one big tip that I can give to your listeners, is that it's to take just 5 minutes throughout the day, you know, when you're making a cup of coffee or having a chat, going to the water cooler, whatever it might be, just stop, listen, what's going on for me right now, and just breathe. Because when we give ourselves time to feel and hear what our body is telling us, that's the greatest indicator. Because you can change the environment, you can change jobs, you can, you know, change relationships, but you will always be taking the same person into those. And if perfectionism starts to knock on your door and that's showing up as, I don't want to send this out until it's perfect, those knocks will only get louder and louder and show up as burnout or, you know, illness, injuries. They manifest in ways that will make you stop and listen if you don't schedule in pauses.
Beautiful. I want to summarize some of the things that we've covered today, because it has been such a fascinating depth of a conversation. We started by really getting into the distinction between high achievers versus perfectionists, and the distinction between holding high expectations versus perfectionism. And I really love how you made the distinction. You know, high achievers, those are the high standards that we want to achieve. We have those high standards and being unapologetic about them. And perfectionism is the way that we do it. And we talked about how holding those high expectations is healthy. It's confidence-based, it's love-based, it's grounded and rooted. But the perfectionism, when we show up that way and we're pursuing our high standards in that way, you know, that's fear-based. Nothing less is good enough. It's about how others perceive you. You're operating out of the, well, what if this happens then? And we're trying to shore all that up. And we even got into the not good enough conversation. It's like we're trying to outrun and outpace those bad feelings so that we don't have to feel them. You took us into what's the root cause behind this perfectionism. And, you know, our brain is doing what it's supposed to do. It's keeping us safe. And at the root of that is that fear. And I love how you gave us the strategy, the exercise that we can do for ourselves or we can take our clients through about taking time to pause, breathe, listen internally, listen to your body, listen to your emotions, and asking those questions to feel it fully and see how it's coming up for you, because it's going to be unique. That's another thing that I really loved throughout the whole conversation is, you know, the way I experience perfectionism is different from you, is different from another listener. And so we have to find how is it showing up for ourselves so we know how to navigate ourselves. And one of my favorite takeaways was when you talked about, well, an indicator that perfectionism is here is you're not actually showing up. And I'm like, wait, what? As a perfectionist, I'm more than showing up, but no, sometimes it's in the not showing up because you're thinking, well, the way you're showing up is not good enough. And it's like, ooh, there's another side to that. So I really appreciated that perspective. And then we got into some of the mantras and the things that we can do to help kind of retrain our brain to show up differently as we're on our journey. Oh my gosh, Katie, any other parting words for our listeners?
Something that you can say to yourself is good enough is good enough. You know, just being here is good enough.
My whole body just melted when you said that. Thank you for that. And thank you for listening to this episode of Just Between Coaches. A great big thank you to Katie Farrell for this incredible conversation. You can find out more about her at katiefarrell.com. That's Katie, K-A-T-I-E, Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L.com. And in the show note, you'll find other resources as well. Katie, thank you so much for coming to the show.
Oh, thanks, Melinda.
I'm Melinda Cohen, and you've been listening to Just Between Coaches. Just Between Coaches is part of the Mirror CFM podcast network, which also includes such shows as Once Upon a Business and Making It. To catch the amazing episodes of Just Between Coaches, follow us on Mirror CFM's YouTube channel or your preferred podcast player. And join the growing community of listeners who have been raving about the show. If you've enjoyed the show, we would greatly appreciate your comments and starred reviews. Your feedback is invaluable in spreading these ideas to a wider audience. Thank you for your support, and we look forward to having you with us on the next episode.